A wind came for me this morning. I heard it pour across 1,000 miles. The windows shuddered. I lay huddled. The windows held, or I'd be gone. A wind like that takes you and you're gone. It takes you for a spirit. I don't think a wind like that ever lets go of you once it's got you. If you huddle long enough, the day will pass over. Light rushes one way, wind another. It's all there out the window, the buildings turning red, and not a soul to see it. I have sat here, God help me, for years now, thinking but not thinking. Since when have I ever truly thought? Sat for years huddled around something that is not in my brain and not in my belly, though I seem to think if I wait long enough, it will move in me. I used to try to carve it out of the past with a pencil, this thing I sought. But I will not go into the past this time, not if I can help it. I will see if I can carve this thing out of me now. He's sitting there again. He's sitting there. All these years, I don't think he's ever truly looked at me. I feel him trying now. I don't think he likes what he sees. He avoids seeing me. There's nothing I can do. Nothing I can do, even when he looks in the mirror. How still he is. What's he going to do with the pencil? His hands, once a child's hands, put the pencil down. He can't write. His hands are going for his sex. They seem to know delicately how to minister to his imagination. He can't write. But his hands create a portal he penetrates as from a great height he watches this manhood, this thing that never quite made him a man, become the totem for all the women in himself he murders to make love to. I want him now. I want him. I could almost touch him, but no, he's repulsive. How can he bear to look at himself? How can he bear it? Sometimes in the afternoon, I stand at the window and hold a mirror up to myself. Then it's almost as if I were out there, perched in that tree, and saw a strange man looking out a strange window. He stands close up against the glass, and a stray bit of light touches him. A bit of light no bigger than a squirrel that might have climbed down the long gray trunk. Is that how light gets here? Somehow, a bit of light climbs down and touches his face. He looks so lost there in the window. Everything around him, the stone window ledge, the wall of the house, even the falling light is more solid than he is. But those eyes, those eyes. It's in them that he is standing, and he is lost in them. He's turning away now, but no, he looks back for a second. Eyes, eyes. There's nothing I can do. When I go up or down the stairs, especially down, I feel I'm about to step off into a deep abyss of water. I will sink through slowly. And I look forward to abandoning myself to this abyss. Did I know this was to be the room in which I would unravel when I watched my last neighbor float down the stairs, strapped to a folding chair? He floated in air with the odd upright bobbing of a seahorse. The two ambulance attendants who bore him clung to his chair as though it were a raft. As he went down, he looked up over his shoulder. He couldn't wave, his arms were strapped to the chair. "Goodbye," he said. "You can have anything from my room you want." "Goodbye, Donald," I called after him. "Thanks. Have fun." And he was carried off. A thin boy whose boyhood dated from a long time ago, torn like the old sweater fallen from his bony shoulders, a boy's shoulders. You could see why someone would still want to touch them. Donald had worked over 40 years for the post office. He was happy-natured, humble, far more at ease with his homosexuality than I will ever be. He loved it when Victor, the cocaine-addicted brute, would crawl in barefoot through the coal chute, climb upstairs, and fuck him all night long. He's gone, with his sexual groans through the walls in the night, with his milk and vodka, his maniacal drunken laughter, with his Pall Malls and burning bedsheets, with his plague of flies and reeking chamber pot. I am the last one living here. Sometimes in the afternoon, I wake from a nap to hear a voice calling me. It wakes me. Is it calling from my sleep? I swear that voice is calling from somewhere in the house. Edgar! I fall into time, lie stunned there. I swear that voice is calling from somewhere in the house. But where? What does it want from me? Is it a man or a woman? A child? I can't tell. That voice has called from a space outside of time, but somewhere in the house. It summons me. I lie gathering sorrow. Then slowly, I look out the window. My eyes carry me away over brick cornices and rooftops where trees bleed gold wood into the sky, up, up into cold, empty blue. The winter climbing of wood into the sky is a thing to watch stunned, quietened. I know I will do the only thing I know how to do, the only thing of which I am capable. I will take a long, aimless walk. One day on a walk, I found a root of a man gazing up at the sky from a gutter. I don't know why I keep thinking of him, except that he reminded me of a giant snail wrapped up in a shell of leaves and rags and torn up garbage bags. In memory, I see him the way you sometimes see people in dreams. I float above him, examine him with a disembodied intimacy. I am perhaps a ghost watching him. I float out over the vastness of his upturned eyes, no bigger than a gnat. And when I am come above the vortex of his vision, the great silver iris flashes below me, and I am taken by the pull of all my terror of plummeting into him. Who is he? A root of a man lying in the gutter, only his bearded face and one hand visible. But I can construct him in complete nudity from beneath his shell of filth and rags, and he is beautiful to me. I walk on, aimless, always aimless. Does he look after me? Does he know my walk has become a lifelong disaster I set out on each day with the hope of never turning back, of never going home? But I know I'll have to, sooner or later, I know I'll have to. I envy him, his regal reclining under sky, his regal lounging in the gutter. Me, I must keep going, must keep going. I think that I would like to be a snail and live in a giant shell spiraling down from childhood I could crawl back up to. But I would no longer be able to reach the center. I would no longer fit. Half my life I have spent lurking about strange neighborhoods. So this is how Edgar spent his life. This is how he spent it. Roaming the streets, drawn on toward older, more decayed neighborhoods. You will not let me rest, Brooklyn. You will not let me rest. Look, in some of the sweetly burning windows, they've not yet taken down their Christmas trees. Peer in, but don't get too close up to the glass. If this is what ghosts do, I'd be good at it. Wander ceaselessly, rest only in the most solitary places, never ever speak to anyone, learn to live on yearning. Finally, get a piece of fried chicken and eat it in the cold park. Do ghosts eat fried chicken? It's growing dark. The few solitary folk whose paths I cross walk more quickly when they see me. Do they think I'm hiding a knife under the rusted iron shutters that cloak me? Yes, I could be a killer, creep quietly out from the trees with a rag full of chloroform, drag my victim back among the roots, and with my bare teeth tear flesh from his living thighs, confusing vengefulness with hunger, my own desire with a lust for supplications. Don't ever stop screaming, don't ever stop, and only sob afterwards, or maybe never. Last fall, I broke my favorite mirror, the little round one, not so terribly little, big enough that it was best to hold it with both hands. A disc of silvered glass. It reminded me of the moon and of the windows and the double doors of the silver dollar. The bar in Georgetown Mother took us to when we were little, where Helen and I would get Shirley Temples. I think I was 4, and Helen was 5 at the time. In the back wall of every booth at the Silver Dollar was a round, blue-tinted mirror, and the top of the bar was blue mirror as well. The round windows in the double swinging doors of the Silver Dollar made me think of sand dollars and the moon and the roar of the sea at night. The pale, precarious sand and the onrushing roar of the sea and the silent moon. I never saw myself in the mirrors of the Silver Dollar. They were too high up. But I think they are the first mirrors I remember, empty, round, and blue. It was only later that I grew shy of my mother, like some strange breathing thing, and she grew shy of me. I had never looked in a mirror then. When I was 15, one day at military school, they showed us a movie, and a young man became beautiful to me. It was during military training class. There were about 20 of us boys in the room, all classmates, all boys the same age. They showed the movie on one of those old reel-to-reel projectors. The movie was of wounded soldiers from the Vietnam War. This was, I guess, in 1972, so it had probably all been filmed recently. Young soldiers with horrible wounds, severed limbs, one young man whose intestines were spilling out and had to be scooped back into his abdomen. Short, gruesome sequences, panting bellies. They did not show the soldiers' faces, just different parts of their bodies. Uniforms peeled back to expose young men's flesh, and always some horrible wound. I guess it was shot in some sort of hospital tent. From time to time, the hand or arm of a nurse would appear, a young woman's hand. One shot all but obliterated all the others from my mind. It was of a young man lying on a cot. All that could be seen of him was his torso and his thighs and one of his arms. He was naked. He lay with thighs spread, and you could see his breath come in short, spasmodic pantings of his flanks and abdomen. His left flank was covered by a gauze bandage taped down all round the edges by thick swatches of tape. It was obvious the bandage covered some grievous wound. The shallow, frantic spasms of his breath were those of someone in shock. But he was beautiful, perfect, like a sculpture. And at the crux of his thighs, his manhood was perfect and beautiful as well, innocent and vulnerable. The clenched offering of testicles, the tender penis. The penis seemed to be jutting up slightly, held away from the torso by the catheter planted in its tip. And then for a second, the hand of a nurse entered the frame. And then the soldier was gone, succeeded by other maimings, other wounds. But I did not see them. I saw the young, panting soldier who would remain in my mind for years, waiting to be given a face and the name of love.